Later this week, the NCAA men's basketball tournament, March Madness, officially tips off. For a second consecutive spring, the pandemic is dramatically affecting how the tournament will be played, including limits on locales and regions. But one debate that pops up among many fans and is renewed during March Madness is how much money the tournament brings in. Thanks to television contracts and passionate fans, that number can reach into the billions of dollars. But the student-athletes, the players, don't directly benefit financially from that. We're beginning to see some changes, though, in compensating those student-athletes. The Arizona legislature is moving forward by large margins with a bill that would allow those student-athletes to make money from use of their name, likeness, or image. And with me to talk about that is University of Georgia Professor Thomas Baker III. Professor, is Arizona following a trend that other states have already adopted?
Yes, we've seen this trend. It actually started in California with the Fair Play to Pay Act. And California really just lit off, I guess you could say, it really set things into motion. Once California started with its legislative process to grant athletes, as you said, the ability to profit off of their own identities, then we started seeing states across the country, we're well over 20 states now with legislation pending. And I keep losing track because the stats keep changing every day, but we have at least six or seven states that have already passed legislation, including California, that grants athletes this right. With the first of which taking effect as early as the summer in Florida, 2021.
States that have been hesitant to do this, why are they doing it now? Are they seeing some writing on the wall that we should know about?
It's really a change of the tides. I think it's a shift in the current. I think that for decades, deference or respect ran with the NCAA. And I think that, you know, whether we're talking federal or state lawmakers, were very respectful to the NCAA and allowing it to regulate its activities as it saw fit. But over the past several decades, the NCAA has proven that its definition of amateurism is very arbitrary. And the idea of keeping athletes from being able to use their own identities for profit, I think, has finally shifted in terms of, you know, public norms to where we're like, where the general public's like, this is ridiculous. And I think it has more to do with that. I think it has more to do with a waking up, if you will.
To what extent, if at all, could this change the debate that we've had for decades about whether student athletes actually should get something like a true stipend, an actual, I'm not going to say salary, but some real pay?
I think we're definitely moving towards that other prize, which of course is, you know, giving athletes their fair share of the money that they bring into the universities. It's just a matter of time. We're just kicking the can down the road. And I think that what we're seeing is incremental gains bit by bit by bit. I've likened it to death by a thousand paper cuts, what the NCAA is going through right now. And I do see that, you know, right now, already athletes are being paid in terms of stipends. They are already receiving small amounts of money, or they are capable of receiving small amounts of money. And that's because of the decision that you kind of referenced earlier involving Ed O'Bannon out of California in the Ninth Circuit, where they said that the NCAA and its member institutions could afford these small stipends so long as they are tethered to education. So our college athletes have been poorly paid professionals since the O'Bannon decision. Mm. What we're talking about is just an amount. You know, right now that amount that could be paid is up to the cost of attendance. This is an amount set by the school that is like a cost of living adjustment. And it includes things like, you know, cell phone bills or the occasional night for, you know, getting some pizza or a date night. And so when you consider all of that, you can see that these amounts aren't tethered to education. And we can see that athletes already are paid. They're just poorly paid.
Do you see this change in the competitive landscape between, let's say, really large state universities and some of the smaller private institutions? And it's some of sports, you have some of the smaller private institutions that actually do quite well. But if we have large state universities that may have the ability to absorb this from a financial standpoint, whatever the changes that exist may be, does that change the competitive landscape, do you think?
I think we could see some changes in the competitive landscape, especially if we see a shift towards a setup that is where athletes are truly picking schools based on, you know, the opportunities that are there rather than, you know, other variables like how much money maybe they make under the table, you know, the black market, so to speak. I think we could see a shift. I think schools that are early adopters, schools that are like trying to jump on this, and I know there are many that are aggressively moving out in front of this name, image, and likeness legislation by creating opportunities for their students, they're going to be at an advantage. The schools that are able to say, look, we can train our athletes in how to manage their brands. We can help them to identify opportunities, and we can help them market themselves. I think those schools are going to be well positioned in the future, and schools that kind of drag their feet might not be. But we have to see what's going to happen with this legislation. We have to see what the NCAA is going to tolerate, what the courts are going to tolerate, because there's still a lot left to be decided. And we don't want to see a situation where the schools are actually, you know, further exploiting the athletes by funneling them into their official sponsors and using some form of manipulation that way. So there's still a lot that needs to be cleared up.
There are a lot of lessons that I think people are going to talk about, whether we learned them or not, because of the pandemic and how that changed things. Do you think there are things that happen during the course of that when it comes to college athletics that we will see change, whether it comes to money or distribution or whatnot?
I think what the pandemic affected most, I would say, has to deal with not really on the financial side of it, although we have to see what the fallout's going to be long term. Right now, it's too early to tell in terms of, like, you know, we saw some relationships like with Under Armour, with some of the Pac-12 schools, some of the issues with that, with the pandemic kind of pushed those relationships to the brink or past it. I think where we saw a lot of ground gained in terms of the pandemic dealt with student athletes who were finding their voice, I think finding their agency, so to speak. We saw this happen at UCLA where athletes were unwilling to restart team activities until they were given some transparency in relationship to the COVID-19 protocols. We saw it at schools across the country that were, addressing the Black Lives Matter movement. Athletes realized that, you know what, if they speak out for themselves, if they stand up and they take control of the situation, then, you know, they do have a voice. They do have power in what they're doing. And I think they're starting to wake up to it.
That is Professor Thomas Baker III of the University of Georgia. Professor Baker, thanks for the time today.
Anytime.